Grant Morrison, you're listening to Behind the Panels. Enjoy.
They can be a great people, Kal-El. They wish to be They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 83 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that jingles your bells and hides a nip of brandy in our long boxes. I'm jolly old St. Richard Grey.
I'm very, very hot David McVeigh.
And I'm joining you, Dave, with Dave Longo.
I'm joining you live from Dave Longo.
The sweat is beginning.
It's already. I'm only up to the second line and it's... I'm schwitzing in here. In this festive issue, Paul Rudd is Ant-Man while Joseph Gordon-Levitt forms a protective barrier against insects as the Sandman. Then Shia LaBeouf is caught ripping off comic for a short film, plus our final kick-ass pick of the week for 2013, Father Christmas by Raymond Briggs. All that and more coming up after these very festive messages. This is Behind the Panels.
My favorite heroes are Spider-Man and my Uncle Fred. My favorite heroes are Wonder Woman and my mama. My favorite heroes are the Hulk and Great Aunt Molly.
Underoos, they even come out heroes against warm water and detergents.
Batgirl and my daddy.
Be a Christmas morning hero. Give Underoos the gift that's fun to give.
Superman and my dynamite mother.
Yeah. Did they say you can get the stains out with water?
Be a Christmas morning hero and give underpants, because that's what I always think. You know,
I think Father Christmas in this book even says something about this.
Bloomin' socks, bloomin' underpants for Christmas. Yeah, look, this is the Christmas special, so don't expect any sense out of us whatsoever. We're in a sweat box and we're about to do two shows back to back.
And there's going to be half of our audience who are from the Northern Hemisphere going, it's freezing, we're in Australia, it's summer. And the other half of our audience...
Dave, that's the most Australian I've ever heard you sound. We're in Australia.
Yeah, mate.
The other half of our audience are going, didn't you just buy an air conditioner? And all I'm going to say is, as soon as you turn the air conditioner off, the heat of the computer turns this room into a hot box.
We've only got 17 computers running in here.
It was cool 15 minutes ago.
So I'm going to maybe take us back to a slightly colder time. Let's hope. I'm going to hit up the Wayback Machine. Maybe it's air conditioned in there. Let's go have a look.
Suddenly, near Stacy's store window, where a priceless golden Yule tree glitters, a little boy approaches a curbside Santa.
Santa, I want to...
Look at that. That Santa must be
Mr. Freeze. Come on.
The dynamic duo. I'll stop them cold. The holiday ice sculpture. Now, to give Stacy's window a shot of absolute zero. Quickly, load that lovely you, my elves. Ho, ho, ho.
Later, as the sad, silent snow falls, the dynamic duo are back in Commissioner Gordon's office.
This is terrible. Not only is the diamond star in Freeze's cold clutches, but now he has the golden tree as well.
Gosh, this is really going to be Gotham's gloomiest Yuletide.
Yes. Unless Mr. Freeze likes gingerbread.
What can Batman have in mind for Mr. Freeze?
What indeed?
Of course Mr. Freeze likes gingerbread, right?
Maybe he likes gingerbread. Robin.
Cold gingerbread.
Cold gingerbread, Robin.
Ginger snaps.
Oh, dear. Well, that was from the 60s cartoon. That wasn't even the regular TV show.
Fair enough.
And I've got to say, these vintage clips of the week kind of started when we did Christmas episode, because when we kind of did What was that one? It was Visions of Sugar Plums Dancing in My Head.
That's right.
In a lot of ways, that's where we sort of started this vintage clip of the week. So Christmas is always a special time for Behind the Panels. Yeah.
And by the way, the 60s Batman, we should just make very quick mention, because the rights are being resolved all over the place for the old 66 series, we're starting to see things like Batman 66, the comic book coming out. Mm. And I was in a comic book store today, and Mego, Batman 66 series Mego dolls are back. It's like awesome.
Well, let's just hope that that means that the DVDs and Blu-rays will come out.
God, I hope so.
Well. Have they resolved that issue?
I think it's in the process of being resolved now.
It looks like it's like incrementally coming out, because that's why we're slowly getting merch. We're slowly getting all those things happening. So, but
how come it's that the Batman movie has been available but not the show?
It's not the rights to Batman. It's the rights to the actual series. Okay. So basically, the series.
Separate rights,
yeah, the series was. Different production companies and different people think they own the broadcast rights to it. And of course, when that was made, there was no DVD or home video market, so that was never resolved back then. Mm. So it's just been a mess. Mm. So, but now it looks like it's finally starting to be resolved up. So hopefully,
Blu-rays of that show.
I want Blu-rays of the 60s. I want Blu-ray remasters of the 66.
Oh, we can only dream. Given how lovely the Blu-ray remasters of Star Trek and things like that look.
Yes.
If they can get anything close to that, that'd be amazing. But more current stuff. We have been reading a lot of stuff this week, haven't we?
We have.
So let's hit up that favourite section that David, I think, described last week. It's reading what thing, bitches?
Where? It's that we got ourselves a reader.
Read between the lines, bitch.
Go back and listen to last week. It was very eloquently put.
Yes, David, keep telling yourself that. We're all fanning ourselves here with copies of Father Christmas, so we have read that this week. It's a nice, light little book, but heaps of stuff came out this week. First of all, a book that I know you've been looking forward to, David, Harley Quinn.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Number one.
I enjoyed it thoroughly.
It was so much fun. It's probably the most fun DC book out there at the moment.
It's actually probably in the whole year.
Yeah, and it's it is. Yeah. And it's actually, it's something we're going to talk about later next week on the award show when we do that, which is the idea of what are some of your favorite trends. And this is actually, should definitely be in the nominations of that trend of being able to take something that is old and true, reinventing it and actually making it fun. Mm. Something like Hawkeye, for instance, or the superior foes of Spider-Man, which is very much like Hawkeye. It's that whole idea of just twisting it into something very odd.
I love that the format is basically the same as Power Girl, that she's turned up to a new city for a fresh start.
Yeah.
And instantly things have gone wrong. You know? And it's that kind of same.
It's so much fun. And it is
personal things, just like in Hawkeye.
Yes.
Like it's personal things that go wrong, not like
right to the point where she's inherited a building.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
And she's immediately going, well, we have to raise the rent on these people.
That's right. She gets two jobs. One, she applies for a job as a psychiatrist, as she used to be,
as Harley Quinzel,
and then also as Harley Quinn as a roller derby girl.
Yeah, she decimates them all. Yeah. And I love the fact that she has her companion in this one is a stuffed badger beaver, whatever it is.
Who talks?
Well, she thinks it talks.
Is that the equivalent of terror?
It is a very funny book, and it is the sort of book that is as only Palmiotti and Connor could write, I think. Because one of the other books that came out this week was number 2 issue.
Oh, that's right.
Painkiller Jane, which is Palmiotti's other book, which Connor does the cover art, but she doesn't do the ongoing art. But it's actually a really good book too, and it's from Icon. It's an owner created book.
It's one of the Marvel imprints.
Because basically, I had no idea. There's actually a little history of Painkiller Jane in the first issue, because I went back and read 1 and 2 together, and basically it talks about the fact that Palmiotti and Quesada, Joe Quesada, created Painkiller Jane. That was their creation. And so basically all this time that Painkiller Jane's been kind of in and out of print has always been Palmiotti.
Yeah.
This is like one of his little pet projects he comes back and revisits. And I also found out that apparently Amanda Connor drew one of the one-shots, which I now have to go try and find.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
So I'm going to go on the search for this book, and if anybody knows where I can find it, let me know.
Well, another old concept that came back this week was Ghost. Which was already a revived concept, the Kelly Sue DeConnick miniseries.
And can I tell you, I'm an idiot, because I didn't read this, because I've read the original miniseries of Ghost. I saw number 1 and I went, oh, I've read that.
It's good. This is actually stronger than...
You are an idiot.
I know.
I think we can acknowledge that after 83 issues of the show.
That I'm an idiot, yes.
If it had 1 point now, maybe you would have picked it up.
If it said ghost now, I would have been there.
Oh, Dark Horse, you need to work on your promotions. Dark Horse and their sensible numbering.
The new 11.
But yeah, it looks really good. I think one of the complaints we had when it first came out, the last miniseries, was it was kind of like going somewhere and then it sort of stops and we want more. Well, this is the continuing story. This is what we wanted. So
I'll be reading it tonight.
it's our old pal Kelly Sue DeConnick, and it's wonderful. So beautiful Phil Noto covers as well.
Oh, and the art in Ghost in general was beautiful, even in that miniseries. So I can't wait to revisit that world. So I'm glad it's back.
One I hope we've all read. Did we all read Daredevil this week?
No.
Not yet. Oh. It's on my read list. I've been reading so much this week, and I just haven't got to that yet.
Read this book, because we're all discussing off air, I think, last week. Maybe it was on air. What we think might happen to Foggy. And
Do we have an answer?
Well, not yet, but that's a cliffhanger of this episode. Okay.
Is this the second to last?
This is third to last one. And they sort of tease at the end the next two issues. But it's a really good issue. It's got a really nice couple of moments with him and the lawyer that, kept teasing him about being Daredevil.
He's like, I'm not Daredevil.
and he finally does this little moment where he goes, I'm not teasing anymore. You know, there's some really nice moments. And Doctor Strange cameo.
Oh, so, all right.
Which is really, really worth reading. Want to quickly give a shout out to Dark Horse Presents, because that's the new issue that's out this week has a Hellboy story in it by Mike Mignola. And it's Hellboy goes to Mexico in the 50s and gets married to Death. So it's really, really interesting. We should give a massive shout out before we talk about a couple of books I know you're dying to talk about, Dave. But we have to mention A Voice in the Dark #2.
Great stuff. Still continuing.
Which we read earlier because we got sent an early advance copy. But excellent. The cliffhanger from the first issue is carried through. But he does it in a very, very clever way. And it doesn't go where you think it's going to go. And where it ends is another cliffhanger. So Laramie's got his plotting down.
Yeah, it's a really, really clever series, and I can't wait to see what Laramie does with this as it goes on. Special shout out to him at all times, because he is just doing such a great job. It's all him.
And look, we are proud to call him a friend of panels. Mm. So,
and when we've said it before, when Kick-Ass comes to resolution, Laramie will be on the show again, because he's going to come and do Kick-Ass with us.
If we can work out when that finishes, because we're all working out how many issues were in it. Over to Image, while we're at Image, I should say, a couple of books came out this week. Now, of course, Saga remains the greatest book in the history of books.
The history of books.
Yeah.
All right, come on, guys. Okay.
We're finally...
Why the Last Man.
Since Why the Last Man.
We were talking about that before the show. All Brian K. Vaughan released this year was just reprints of Why the Last Man, he'd still be the best writer.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the fact that he's also doing The Private Eye, which is also an amazing book at the same time. I mean, this issue, we're finally caught up to the cliffhanger from about six issues ago where they were hiding under the stairs in the lighthouse. And we're now moving forward again after doing all that clever Vaughan backstory thing that he does. And my God, this is a good issue.
So many dominoes fall in the most horrific, tragic ways.
There's a brand new brand. It's another freelancer turns up. Amazing new character. This is going to really drive things forward. We get... a little bit of a fate for the will in there as well, and there's just so many threads, so much feels.
All right, so here's the question for you guys: How many issues is he going to go with it?
Oh, he could go hundreds. I feel hundreds.
Yeah, but he won't.
He probably
he'll do it. Why the Last Man? He'll bring this to conclusion.
Sure, I reckon, because that went about 60. I wouldn't mind betting around that mark.
Yeah.
So a nice 5 years worth of stories, you know.
He seems like he's in a position now to be able to run it to when he feels that it's...
He's got all these pieces in place and he can still surprise us.
Because everybody loves it just for the same reasons we're talking about it now. Yeah. It's just something else.
It's just taken every award, and justifiably so. It is one of those books, when the first issue came out, it was like, I suppose I should pick this up. This sounds interesting enough. And then I read it and I was like, it was one of those books that just hits you like a lightning bolt and you think, wow, why aren't they all like this? And then you get the second issue and it's better. And the third issue is better. And then you just keep going like that. And then they take a break and you're hungry for it. And then you come back and it's just as good as it always was. And I can't say enough good things about Saga.
I'm currently two issues behind on Saga, but I will be catching up on
it's
that.
It's definitely to the top of my read pile every week that it comes out. Yeah. So
And Saga's one of those things is like every month that goes by, you forget how good it actually is until you pick it up. And then, you, like in your case, Dave, with two to go.
Oh, I'll finish those off in no time. Yeah.
Oh, man, I remember why this is the
case. It's you look at a read list on an iPad and you've got to go through your books and for some reason it's just not getting there.
Well, if you have to pick the best two issues of Saga, you can always say the last two.
Another new one this week was number 3 of Pretty Deadly.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I'm just to throw that out really quickly, it was a bit impenetrable. I have trouble getting through.
See, this is the first week where I actually started getting into the vibe of it. I really actually felt as though I was getting Kelly Sue's world there, and I actually liked it more. I still agree with you for the most part, though. I still think it's a fairly... There needs to be something more structurally happening there that's not happening at the moment, because her concepts are fantastic. The image, Emma Rios's art is still amazing, and the story itself, the narrative that they're drawing on, I'm really intrigued by. I just can't find the hook in.
I still understand it. Don't understand it. That's the problem.
Good. So that's an excellent book, but another ongoing, which is going almost as long as Saga, is Revival, of course, which is the book you brought to the show, Dave, that we did as a pick of the week not too long ago, a couple of months ago, and I got hooked then, and I've been keeping up with it since. I just caught up on one or two issues today, and my God, it's still amazing.
It's still so amazing. It's another one. It's the same kind of coin. It's like you forget how good this book is until you go back and read it.
Yeah.
Like the thing about Revival is its characters are also real.
And Revival, the thing about Revival is that it's so incredibly complex. And like, you know, Saga has a lot of threads running, but Revival has like, what, tenfold the amount of threads that are rolling?
Yeah, like almost every townsperson has their own secrets and that they all sort of come out in some way, you know.
Mm. And this issue didn't really like, you know, finish anything or wrap up any arc, but it's still very good.
Yeah, it's got that amazing thing of like no matter where you are in the world, you're fascinated by what's immediately in front of you. And the art's beautiful in that one as well. That's Jenny Frison, is it?
Tim Seeley.
Frison does the covers, I think. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, the covers are magnificent every time.
I want to give a big quick shout out to Black Science number 2, which is another Image book that's out this week. If you haven't caught up with this
was a quick turnaround, wasn't Black Science the only couple
weeks ago? Mentioned that a few weeks ago, but 2 came out this week, and if it's not out this week, maybe it's out next week, because I do read Image a few weeks ahead sometimes, and there's another book that comes out next week called Survivor number 1, which is definitely worth picking up as well, because that's James Robinson's new book. James Robinson just, of course, finished up on Earth 2. And this is James Robinson and a great little artist named a great artist named Jay Bone, who's been doing some amazing stuff, sort of slightly cartoonish sort of art, almost looks like that Penny Arcade sort of stuff. But it just really suits the material. It's about this stoner in the middle of nowhere, and aliens attack the town, and no one believes him because he's a stoner. But that's a Survivor. That's out next week, so look for that if you're not inundated with Christmas stuff. But Black Science is kind of like a cross between Stargate gone wrong and an old, 1950s sci-fi serial. It's just got this really old school science fiction feel to it, but they've got this device and it's being thrown from one dimension to the next, and they're all more terrifying than the last one. And
like a Sliders kind of.
It is a bit Sliders-ish, actually, yeah. And they're not... They're kind of parallel universes. They're just thrown into this one where the Germans are fighting... those damn Germans. fighting the Apache, but the Apache have got, like, these giant spaceships. it's just an amazing book, and it just took me by surprise, and I really, really, really love that one. I think that's Rick Remender, so go and check that one out if you haven't done that already. So... amazing book.
The other thing that I did this week, which I think we should mention, because it could prove to be either a warning or a pique your interest, depending on which way you're thinking, I caught up on Iron Man. Now, Iron Man is one of the series with Marvel now that has kind of really been sliding because they've been doing all sorts of weird things about the secret origin of Tony Stark. Well, they've finished that now.
Yeah.
And I thought it was fascinating to find out that they've completely rewritten Tony Stark's origin now. Because as it turns out, if you remember, if you're keeping track, when I spoke about this before, we said that he was actually genetically altered by aliens and that's how he was such a genius and blah. Turns out none of that is true because Tony Stark is actually adopted. And there is actually another Stark brother who is being hidden all this time, who is actually basically in an iron lung, and he's a genius. And now Tony's been reunited with his brother, so to speak. And now the arc of Iron Man is they're trying to build the city of the future.
Right.
So this is where Iron Man's going at the moment.
That's forward to an Iron Man 4.
Where they're building a city.
Yeah, because he doesn't have the chess piece anymore. You know?
He'll get it back.
He'll get it back. Yeah. It's like, oh no, I'm in the Middle East again. And
no, there'll be some metal shards in his feet that are making their way up.
Yeah.
One more piece. Yeah.
So Tony Stark, so Iron Man I've been keeping up with. And the other one I want to talk about very quickly is Nova.
Oh, yes. I caught up with Nova as well.
Yeah, I caught up with Nova finally. I got to tell you, not my favorite book on the planet. It is fun.
It turned around for me for a while.
It turned around. Yeah. It is lightweight stuff, though. But I don't know. I feel like it can't find its feet. It can't quite decide what it wants to be.
I think it's stuck because they've got, because of corporate synergy, they've got that whole thing with the Ultimate Spider-Man TV series.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got Nova in that, and they want to keep him young and fresh. And
but now we're introducing Speedball and all this sort of stuff into it. And you see the guy going, wait a minute, the Speedball I remember is the one that blew up a stadium in Civil War and then ended up becoming the masochist, who eventually got his act together and became Speedball again. But he's a lot older than... Mm. They're portraying him
like
in this.
Like 15 years old in this, right?
It's ridiculous.
And or a party truck in the 80s.
So I just don't quite know. It's the whole thing. I mean, I'm starting to find the kid a little bit whiny. The whole thing, like, why do I want to join you? I could have been an Avenger, you know? It's like,
and the whole like cloud of Richard Rider is still starting to really
resolve
irritate
it already.
Me.
Yeah. You know?
I know. It's like we're 10 issues into it. I know we don't have the answers immediately because we still don't have the answers for the Guardians where they've been, but I'm guessing that will probably be a big event next year. They'll explain the whole Cancerverse thing.
I hope so.
Yeah. Dave, just quickly before we move on from this segment, there's two things I want you to talk about. Quickly, you mentioned All New X-Men, not so good.
No, because it's just been spinning its wheels.
Yeah.
Every single time. It's like Bendis is...
Since Battle of the Atom.
I can tell you, well, now that Battle of the Atom's done, it's just going to be an issue of someone new gets recruited. Because you know how the whole storyline is like that now mutants are popping up everywhere. And it just seems
Which
to me
is a storyline they're using in everything because they're doing that with Inhumanity as
everything,
well.
Everything. Yeah. And it just seems like, is this just an excuse?
Human beings are becoming the endangered species.
Yeah.
But the last three issues of All New X-Men have been the same. It's been like, okay, this issue is going to be X-23 and we're going to find out how she becomes a mutant.
Can I make an announcement here? I'm declaring a moratorium on mutants for a little while. For me personally, I don't know about you guys, I'm just not into the X universe at the moment.
Honestly, I tend to get drawn back when they have the event and then just tune out again immediately afterwards. So
I'm just feeling like I don't find myself being drawn to read any of the X books at the moment.
I think
and this used to be my book.
They've fragmented.
I mean?
You know, the thing is, X-Men used to be such a strong brand because it was a single book back when Claremont was doing it. And he started branching out. But now X-Men is so diluted, it's hard to get the core of what they are anymore.
Yeah.
And I wonder if all the... I mean, I don't think you can say this about any story, but, I mean, Claremont maintains that all the best X-Men stories have been... He's done, you know, kind of thing.
I kind of agree with him.
And while there have been some great stories, I mean, Grant Morrison's X-Men took it to a next level and stuff, but... I wonder how...
Joss Whedon's Astonishing X-Men was really good.
You're always going to get someone who surprises you. Like,
You got, like, All New X-Men with Bendis at the moment. You compare that to, like, the new X-Men with Grant Morrison and Astonishing X-Men with Joss Whedon. You can see the difference very clearly, is that there seems to be this obsession on Bendis's end that the whole Marvel Universe has to be, you know, crumbling. Has to be, like... Being destroyed. Like, there has to be some sort of cosmic bearing on what these characters are doing.
I'm sorry, sounds like you were just describing Hickman.
You know, but this is exactly the problem. It's the problem in Hickman's work, too. It's the problem that's plaguing the Marvel Universe, because you look at the new X-Men, you look at Astonishing X-Men, very contained. Like, it's about this family of mutants.
And
in
Claremont's
a school,
X-Men was the same.
And Claremont's X-Men. And you see, it's like, once you focus down and you figure out what these characters actually mean, like, the beauty of the new X-Men is that these characters are outsiders. And with Bryan Singer's film, is the outsiders. That's what there is to it. That's the key. Tell stories that focus on what it is to be an outsider, what it is to be on the outskirts.
And while I find it interesting...
Use it for political commentary.
Exactly.
You know?
While I find it interesting, I think that's a really good commentary as well, though, the idea of when the minority become the majority, what does that mean to the cause?
Mm.
I think
but we've also already examined that in House of M.
Yeah. But look, you know? Like, we've Bendis, it's a different story because I feel that there is potential there. You've got like a mutant that used to be a leader that everybody followed, but now is a leader of a different kind that is like supportive of a minority view, but a minority view that nobody really appreciates or shares.
Yeah.
And so you could deal with some very interesting sort of element there, but he doesn't.
And I am the first one to defend Bendis because I love Bendis's writing, but he is so guilty in the last 2 years of not being able to resolve any of his ideas. Yeah. He comes up with these great ideas and then has nowhere to go with them. Let's go back to Age of Ultra.
I agree completely. Yeah.
And Bendis lately in the All New X-Men has been absolutely irritating in his use of exposition, particularly. Mm. Every single page, it's like, well, remember when Scott Summers, you know, he used to be a good leader and, you know, he went off with this and this and this. And he used to be with Phoenix. And then after that, after the whole Dark Phoenix saga, he being, you know, it's like characters are just spouting one, like their history. Although, like, Hank Pym, do you remember what Hank Pym used to be? It was just like, get on with it.
To be fair, Claremont.
Claremont used to do a lot of that. That was very much a Claremont
quickly
thing.
Before we move on from the segment, I just wanted to ask you one thing, Dave, because you saw an adaptation of a comic this week, which is Blue is the Warmest Color.
Yeah, we have to talk about Blue is the Warmest Color. We have to. Being a comic book show, we have to.
And it doesn't come out, the film doesn't come out in Australia until next year.
February 20 or something.
But the graphic novel's out now. I've got a copy. I haven't dived into it yet, but you've done both. Yeah. So.
Well, I went to see the film last week.
Yep.
And because it won the Palme d'Or, we have to talk about this. A comic book movie won the highest film prize anybody can achieve. So it's something we have to go and see. We probably would have seen it without the comic book. But I went to see the movie and was enamored by it. It's a
3-hour film, isn't it?
3 hours. And of course, there's been controversy about Blue is the Warmest Color. Everybody's probably heard the controversy. It features graphic lesbian sex scenes.
I mean, take all my money.
And David.
We are talking graphic. You know, on Team America.
You're selling it more and more.
Yeah, I'll explain to you what it is. Yeah? I'll get you on the film side, Dave. You know, on Team America, World Police.
Yes.
The sex scene in that.
Yes.
That is what this is
it's
like.
It's done with marionettes.
It's with puppets.
No, without puppets and without sound.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
But anyway, but it's a 3-hour film and it
sign me up. Where do I buy a ticket to this thing?
But anyway, I'll be very quick on this. Very brief, like a minute max. Like, you know, the story is not about what it is to be a lesbian. It's not about what it is to come out and all that stuff. The movie story is sexual maturity and what love means and what relationships mean. And the actual title in French is called The Life of Adele.
That's right.
And the main character is Adele. So when I walked out of the movie, first thing I did was I've got to read the comic book. I've got to see what the deal is. And the comic book is sort of similar in the sense that it follows the first half of the movie. But the main character in the comic book is called Clementine. So not Adele. So it's a different character, and so therefore a different kind of story. And the story in the comic book is more a story of coming out. It's a very simple lesbian story, but where it fails, I think the comic book's quite weak, to be honest, because it has this framing device where the main character, Clementine, has killed herself. And it's not a spoiler because
That's the framing device.
The framing device is that her lover, Emma, is reading her diary post her death. And it's very, very like Dear Diary, you know, I killed myself for my love. And it's very much about like coming out. Whereas the movie is much more deeper and doesn't have this framing device. And so the movie will do things. The comic book will have two panels. The movie will be a half an hour sequence.
Right.
So the movie is something that takes this core element from the graphic novel and spreads it out. And really goes deep into what relationships.
I'm looking forward to this film greatly.
The movie is stunning. Yeah. It's beautifully filmed, amazingly performed, and you can just see why it won.
Well, the comic book has actually been renamed Blue is the Warmest Color.
Yeah, well, the English translation has. Tell you what, when it comes out...
I think the comic book is called Blue is the Warmest Color.
Yeah, when it comes out in... No, I think the original French title was something slightly different as well.
My bad.
When the film comes out in Australia in February next year, we'll do a special doing the both of them together.
Yeah.
So we'll do that then.
Yeah. Just one final note on it is that the comic book, the creator of it, considers the film to be a disservice. She considers that they ruined her story, which is interesting from my perspective, considering I liked the movie much, much more.
Interesting. Okay.
So more on that, I guess, when we
definitely
do it.
No, it's definitely one I want to do.
It's very important, I think, though. It's an important work.
Well, speaking of appropriating comic book works, there is a story in the news headlines this week about someone who's appropriated a comic book. So, what say we dive into some new news?
There you go.
News headlines before we melt in here.
Why not? Because I'm melting already.
What a world.
Graphic lesbian sex.
That should be a new intro, shouldn't it?
Sick.
Rudd has been officially announced as the lead in Edgar Wright's Ant-Man. Slapping the best, man.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt, the man of 1,000 films apparently at the moment, he seems to be in everything, has announced that he is working with Neil Gaiman and David Goyer, oh, that's a shame, on a Sandman film. Joseph Gordon-Levitt will direct and star in the project.
Charles Soule has been announced to replace Matt Fraction on the upcoming Inhuman series, which Fraction has dropped out of.
Oh. DC Entertainment has teamed with Motions Company Madefire to produce the DC 2 multiverse graphic novel. Just what we needed.
Another DC.
Batman Arkham Origins. They will also remaster Injustice Gods Among Us with motion and sound. Hold on. Isn't there already motion and sound on Injustice?
Yeah, and I get to press buttons as well. Dark Horse are aiming for a more unified approach to their superhero titles with Project Black Sky launching in January 2014.
Dark Horse has also announced an official Hellboy 20th anniversary celebration on the 22nd of March 2014, dubbing it Hellboy Day. That's unique though, isn't it?
Speaking of days, Free Comic Book Day 2014 will be the biggest ever with over 60 books to choose from. Highlights include a 48-page Mouse Guard hardcover anthology.
But you can still only choose two of them, right?
Yeah.
Brian Singer has assembled Simon Kinberg along with X-Men 2 writers Michael Dougherty and Dan Harris to work on X-Men Apocalypse.
Finally, Shia LaBeouf is in hot water after admitting to ripping off artist Daniel Klaus for his new short film. Now, this has been a big story in the news this week. This is really interesting. What happened was that he released a short film and people started watching it and realizing it was almost identical to comic book creator Daniel Klaus's one of his works. And he's since had to come out and apologize, but Klaus is seeking legal action.
So he should.
I heard somewhere that they were comparing his apology to Mel Gibson's, and it was almost word for word Mel Gibson's apology.
Oh, really?
Remember, Shia LaBeouf has got lots of experience apologizing.
I see.
He apologized for Indiana Jones 4, he's apologized for Transformers 2.
And Transformers 3.
And Transformers 3.
And he's soon to be seen in Lars von Trier's Nymphomania.
So. He'll be apologizing.
He apologizes a lot during that.
I'm sorry, that doesn't happen usually.
He turns around to the audience and just goes, I'm sorry you had to see that.
Three and a half hours. No, isn't it 5.5 hours?
Oh, it's a long film.
Anyway, which version? The mainstream or the X-rated?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's
we'll save
not
that
here,
for
not now.
We'll save that for GMC. But this is really interesting because it's since come out as well, in the midst of all of this, that some of the other stuff he wrote, the prose he wrote, was apparently ripped off directly from Charles Bukowski as well.
Oh, man, so what's he doing?
Basically, the thing is that people are saying, what is wrong with this guy? Is he so clueless, or is it just Hollywood entitlement to think that I'm a big star, I can get away with anything? You won't.
He probably also makes the assumption that nobody reads comic books.
Yeah.
Have you heard Daniel Klaus's comment on that, on the whole thing?
What was that?
He said that, he goes, I've never heard of Shia LaBeouf, I've never spoken to him, I've never seen any of his movies, but I really want to know what the hell was going through his mind when he made this film.
Yeah.
Like how the hell do you think you can
he
get
said
away
it,
with that?
He said it was a tribute rather than, and he said, oh, it's just a tribute that I got too deeply into. Mm. But... you know, which is again what Mel Gibson said.
I don't know if it was Mel Gibson specifically. I can't remember, but he apparently plagiarized his apology from someone.
From Kevin Rudd, maybe.
It's a 3-hour apology.
On behalf of the LaBeouf people, I'm sorry.
I know, the thing that we should do is stop pretending that Shia LaBeouf is like the world's best actor anyway.
Yeah, you know? No, I don't like, think. He was good in Holes.
That was interesting because like I was listening to some commentary on this where they were saying that the problem with this is that he made a film that was talking about the state of criticism.
Right.
And the thing is that now because of all this crap, the conversation has moved into plagiarism as opposed to something that's potentially something we should talk about.
Yeah,
like what is the state of criticism and where does criticism fit into society?
I agree, that's a conversation that needs to be had, but
not this way.
Ways of doing about it.
Yeah, because if Shia LaBeouf had just sought Daniel Klaus's approval and just
and he probably would have given it to him.
He probably would have given it to him too.
Go for it, dude. Yeah. You know,
well, because it's so interesting for a filmmaker, an actor, to respond to his own criticisms through making film.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, let's move into something that I think is beyond criticism, which is our kick-ass pick of the week. And let's hit that up right now.
Well, see how you like this.
What
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
It was the night before Bloomin' Christmas, and all through the Bloomin' house, Father Christmas was stirring, because Bloomin' Christmas is here again.
Originally published in 1973, Raymond Briggs' beloved and subversive Christmas story takes the character of Santa and turns him on his head. Grumbling all the way and a frequent imbiber of the festive spirits, Briggs casts Santa as the everyman and might just make you think twice about leaving out some milk and cookies this Christmas Eve. On the 40th anniversary of this classic, this is Father Christmas.
Sorry, I had to cut you off there, Dave.
That's all right. I was just...
That was enough beef for me.
I was just going to say, if we start doing the pick of the week, I have to stop using it as a fan.
It is very hot in here, but we're doing a...
My response to your intro, Richard. That's beautiful.
That was beautiful.
I know. I finally got some Christmas spirit. I was visited by three ghosts of Christmas past before I recorded that.
Can I just lead this off and just say that Raymond Briggs, this book means a lot to me. This was the first Raymond Briggs I ever read. So I actually read this way back when it first came out.
Forty years ago, maybe.
I was very little. I was probably six or seven when I read it. And I read it a few more times throughout the 80s, and I always came back to this. And then when Where the Wind Blows, When the Wind Blows came out, I read that much younger as well. But I read that because of this book. I went, another book by him. Not the same kind of book.
Younger audiences will know Briggs from Father Christmas, its sequel, Father Christmas Goes on Holiday, which actually formed the basis of the movie as well, and The Snowman. As well,
so, I haven't read The Snowman.
Yeah, no, nor have I. Maybe we'll do that next Christmas.
Maybe
we'll do our annual Raymond Briggs Christmas special. So we've actually got a sequel to this we can do as well.
Absolutely,
so we've got our next two Christmas specials.
Now, this is a really, really lightweight book. There's very little word in this,
but it's very little words. But there's so much happening. There's probably more in this than your average, you know, modern epic art.
There's more in this than there is in Forever Evil.
I wasn't going to mention specific art, because it's our Christmas special and I'm all about the positive. So
that's the one where Batman goes around like delivering presents.
Well, it's funny. Not last year, the year before, our Christmas pick of the week was Batman Noel.
Which was brilliant.
Which was basically...
I've not read that, but please tell me that's Batman going around delivering presents.
He's delivering pain. It's
basically a Christmas carol.
It's Christmas carol. He's visited by a ghost at Christmas Park.
It's
done by the same team, or part of the same team who did Joker.
Oh, it's done by the artist.
That's right. It's Lee Bermejo who did this. Is the art. Brian Azzarello did Joker. This was written by him as well.
Bermejo wrote and drew this Batman Noel, and it is fantastic.
Well, painted, I think.
He painted it, and he wrote it, and it's just this really heartfelt book. Last year we couldn't get through the Christmas pick, so this year we made sure we were going to do something
that was a classic. So this one, the basic story is, as I said in the intro, was that this is Christmas Eve. Father Christmas, who's depicted as a grumpy old man living by himself.
Isn't he gorgeous?
And he's wonderful. And the thing about this is that Briggs has depicted him as just an average man. He actually based him, I think, partly on his father and people he knew, that kind of real West Yorkshire kind of...
Blimey.
Bloomin' hell. Blow the bloomin' snow. Brr.
Bloody weather.
Here you are, I hate winter. You know, that kind of thing.
I love he refers to all of his animals by what type they are. It's like, here you go, deers.
Yep.
Hello, cat. Hello, dog. Cat,
Keep still, you lousy deers. And the whole thing is just, it goes through, he's getting suited up. Giddy up, tally ho, rain, what next? And swears weather.
bringing his sled out, going, work. Right.
Blooming chimneys, blooming soot. Well, you know, and then, you know, gets there and he enjoys it when he comes across a bottle of brandy in one of the things and stuff.
I love the fact that his house looks like a typical little suburban house.
Yeah.
When he gets out, he actually locks the door when he leaves.
I did end up pulling it. There's a BBC documentary. There's an interview with him, and I forgot to add the clip to my soundboard, but he basically talks about the fact that he started thinking about Father Christmas and extrapolating from that and making it real, because all of his characters he tries to make real in some ways. And we saw that in When the Wind Blows, when he really made them just a typical... He used his parents as the basis for that, which he did in other books as well. But he used his parents as a basis for that one, and very much he's used his father here to give him that realistic edge. But then he extrapolated that and said, okay, Father Christmas, so he's old. He's old, he'll have a beard. He'll have a beard and he's probably a bit cranky. And he won't have a wife. That just seemed wrong to me. And he sort of and he talks about the way he developed this character. And you sit there and you're thinking, wow, there is so much more in this than the initial reader. If you were a kid reading you wouldn't get that. You just think cranky old Santa. But what's wonderful about it is that it's the most, despite him being so cranky, it is the most Christmassy book you could possibly
and
imagine.
He's still doing exactly what Father Christmas does. It's all work, and bloody weather. But when he actually gets in his sleigh, he's out delivering presents. And, you know, he's doing everything that Father Christmas has to do. But I love the fact that all he's waiting for is the weather to warm up.
Well, I love, which is why in the sequel he goes on holidays to somewhere warm.
Yeah.
So, the moment I loved, and you mentioned it before the show, David, was the when he passes the milkman.
Yes.
And he goes, still at it, mate. Nearly done. I love it. It's such a British thing as well. It's British because his final delivery is Buckingham Palace.
Yeah. And he goes, flags up, they're home.
Yeah.
I love it when he's on top of the caravan. He goes, how do you get into this living thing?
And there's the other thing. Blooming aerials, blooming chimneys. it's great. I mean, the thing is, there's not a lot you can say bad about this book.
No.
But I think the surprising thing is that the real joy of this is that you can read it on those two levels. You can read it just basically as Santa out on Christmas Eve, delivering his stuff, coming home to what he loves. He still loves coming home at the end of it. And you know, nipping into a nice bottle of brandy from...
Cognac, from
good old Fred.
Good old Fred. Bloomin' socks, bloomin' tie.
And even Santa... Yeah, exactly. Even Santa has to go through the whole, you know, dodgy gifts, dodgy ties and socks from relatives, and then gets the nice bottle. He, like, snuggles up in bed with his cat, and then finally breaks the fourth wall and turns to us and says, and happy bloomin' Christmas to you too, you know. And that's perfect. To me, that's a perfect Christmas story.
And I love the fact he finishes his deliveries, yet he still comes home, he puts on the Christmas pudding, he roasts a turkey, has a bath, and then a shower. All the way through it, he's just mumbling to himself. It's like, oh, yeah, nice Christmas pud this, pot of tea, pot of tea.
presents, seen enough of those things for one day. Yeah, all that sort of thing. But he's still with the radio on with Christmas carols and all that sort of stuff. I really love this take, and I really love the idea that this is a children's book as well that uses the comic format, because the artwork is wonderful.
I think Briggs actually refers to it as a picture book.
A picture book, but... Yeah. But he uses the panels of...
So well.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
I mean, you had a page open here.
We'll beep that out.
Please beep that out. It's masterful.
It's the page
broken records. We always say, like, that Grant Morrison thing, you know, a good comic is how it uses the panels.
Yeah.
But that's absolutely stunning.
Now, this book we should state, 40 years ago. We should state, this is actually kind of a hard one to dig up now. I mean, found it.
This is the 40th anniversary edition, so they have just reprinted it.
Oh, fantastic.
So it's certainly a perennial classic that should be available to everyone.
Yeah.
The page that Dave and I have now got open, which is, we're talking about the paneling, is wonderful. It's got a Santa climbing down a chimney, and each panel is him further down.
And then he goes, bloody blooming suit.
And you see kind of like a cross-section of the house as he goes past every level.
He really likes the cross-section of the house. There's also that one shot later in the book where he's walking across the rooftop, and it's a double-page spread.
And you actually have to look back to the previous page to see Santa.
Yeah, well, not just that. It's like an X-ray of the house. So you can see some of
them.
Yeah, that's the one. Some of them are sleeping. They've got a party going in another house. There's so much happening.
But see how you start, you read from the left and you see Santa on the roof, and then you go to the next page and you see the sleigh.
Yeah, yeah.
So it makes you sort of go back, and you end up staying on the pages for a while.
Yeah,
You know, and that's something that's
for a completely
really,
wordless,
a wordless
panels,
spread.
Yeah.
And that's masterful.
Mm.
And it's a wordless spread. He keeps the wordless spread up for a couple of pages after that. But he's got nice big... I mean, the next page has a couple of things, but he just said nothing more than grr.
On the next That's page. My favourite page, this one. This, here, yeah, where he's eating his dinner.
Santa eating his packed lunch on the roof with his reindeer, you know? And it's just a wonderful moment. And I think it's something that carries on, this kind of attitude carries on into things like When the Wind Blows and The Snowman, and obviously Father Christmas Goes on Holiday. You've got that kind of very typical... kind of British thing.
Raymond Briggs really loves old British men. Have you noticed this? Well, I mean, it's that old British character.
Well, he is writing his father a lot, you know, but it is...
Is he still alive, Raymond Briggs?
I think he is, actually. I think the interview I saw was a fairly recent one.
He hasn't produced any new work for some time, though, that I'm aware of.
No, there'd probably be a really easy way of
yeah, if only we had an interconnected set of networks that would actually tell us this information.
Long-time listeners have been frustrated with the fact that they can yell out the answer faster than we can remember that we can look it up.
I have limited computers turned on because I am literally melting into my chair.
And so... mine is... No, he's still alive. I don't know if he's done much recently. But let's have a look. He was... I mean, this book was an award winner. It won... The Kate Greenaway Medal as for the year, which is a massive prize for this type of literature. And I'm just trying to see what he's done recently. He has the most recent thing that's listed in his selected works is 2004, The Puddleman. Years later, he did Ethel and Ernest, A True Story. That was done in 98, and that's basically the story of his parents. And you can see the similarities between them and the couple in When the Wind Blows.
Yeah.
So he is, like I said, he did this in 73. 2 years later, he did Father Christmas Goes on Holiday. Now, the film that was made, it's a 25-minute animated film that's made.
I've never seen the film. This.
The first half of that is actually Father Christmas Goes on Holiday. And then it moves into this. It moves into this
story. In some
ways,
it actually makes sense considering the little dream he's having at the beginning of this book. So.
Yeah, and then it sort of segues into that, and then he goes off and it ends with where this ends. It's basically a scene-for-scene adaptation. It's only a 25-minute film, so you can do both stories in under 25 minutes. And but the voice that would be mocking, you know, go like that, is dead on. It's that. It's exactly how you read it in the book, you know. And I did see briefly, there was like a... If you Google the trailer and you bring up on YouTube... There is an American dubbed version, and it sounds
that wouldn't work
horrible.
At all.
It was done for CBS or something. It's just a really, really, really horrible.
Why would you dub it?
I don't know. For the same reason, they always have that one token local actor in every Disney Pixar production.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, you know, let's throw in
Rove McManus as the lobster
for no good reason.
Wasn't David Koch in like one?
Yeah,
of them?
Yeah, they had like some local newsreader, you know. Yeah. For those of you overseas who don't know who David Koch is, you're like the most of Australia.
Yeah,
you.
Oh, you're just being jealous.
I am. I remember when he was just the financial advisor on Talkback Radio.
That's what we do in Australia. We promote our financial advisors to our head anchors.
Or our sports commentators to studio heads.
This is completely off topic. I once had a criminal law lecturer who was a dead ringer for Tim Bailey, the weatherman.
That's right, people, you heard a law lecture.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, I actually have 3 degrees.
and yet you do a comic book podcast.
I have a Bachelor of Arts in political with honours in political science. I have a Bachelor of Laws and a Master's in Information Management. I'm overqualified for the show. But,
I have a Bachelor in Visual Arts. So.
But I just scored a major gig.
I have a Diploma in Information Technology.
I just scored a major gig. I'm hosting the first annual Behind the Panels Award Ceremony.
Hey. Which you will hear on New Year's. That's right. Absolutely. We're going to do our wrap-up and our roundup of the year on what we think the winners and losers were. Mostly winners.
Well, speaking of wrap-ups and roundups, let's just wrap this up. Let's wrap a puppy up on this bow. No, wait. Let's put a bow.
This is must read.
This is
something you have on the shelf. This is something that you share with your children. This is something you share with your children's children.
This is something that you put your children on the shelf and then share with them.
This is something you get rid of your children and you keep this book.
This will outlive us, just like forever.
Put it this way. This goes on the shelf. This goes on the shelf next to your copy of Twas the Night Before Christmas.
Okay. This is one of the best comics we've read all year. It really is.
Yeah.
I think we might have to readjust our picks for the award ceremony. No, but look, this is as David said at the start, we needed to make up for last year's Christmas pick.
Absolutely.
This is a book. You know, we could go on about it and we probably will, but just read it.
Just read it.
It'll take you all of 20 minutes to read and it'll stay with you for a lifetime.
Yeah. Mm. As I say, you'll want to share it with everybody. Do you know what? This is a sort of book that you'll buy a copy, you'll read it, and then you'll end up buying all your friends a copy for Christmas.
Yeah. Well, as I did.
Yeah, as you did. Yes.
David, I think while we're wrapping up, let's just, while we're in the festive mood of sharing, let's get some girl from Ipanema happening.
I can try that, but we're not ready for her at all.
No, well...
but keep talking and I'll bring her up.
Because we had a little bit of feedback this week because it is our final show for the year.
Oh, wait, here she is.
Hey. Oh, hey, girl. What's up? Look, our old pal Matt Kay from Melbourne wrote to us. He just wanted to say Merry Christmas and Happy 2014. Hope to see you all at Melbourne Oz Comic Con next year. We might be there as retailers, you never know. and I said he's also got some stuff for GMC, but we'll address that over there if we ever get back to that show. And he's also left some nice stuff over on Behind the Panel's iTunes page for us, which is something we encourage everyone to do.
Absolutely.
If you want to see this show grow in 2014, go and hit us up on iTunes, go and leave some feedback, go and leave 5 stars. I've spoken to some people who have said, oh yeah, I keep meaning to leave feedback for you. Just do it. It takes 5 seconds.
Won't take you long. In the spirit of giving over Christmas, now's the time to do it.
Think of it. You don't have to get us anything. but leave us some feedback, and that's our present.
There you go.
There you go. I mean, some, you know, hookers and blow would also be nice, but the ratings will do for now. Also, we got a couple of weeks ago when we were doing the Man of Steel thing, we got an email from Mitchell Deacon, and it was a really long email.
Oh, we talked to him, and we said we'd come back to it.
And I never did. So I just want to quickly get back to that now. He just said, look, great show. He's always been listening to our shows. Been listening since the early days of Tech Actually.
Boy, that is going back a while.
He gives his answer to the Blu-ray question there, which I won't get into now. But he also,
I don't remember what the Blu-ray question was now. So.
It was about why he should watch Man of Steel.
Oh,
the
that's right,
time.
That's right, that's right.
He's also, he was known as Rogue Sire back in the live days.
I remember Rogue Sire.
So, but what he says, on a complete side note to the competition, but he wanted to talk about the show. This is the relevant part for here. He said, I have a question I'm hoping you guys can help explain to me. I'm new to comics and I've been mainly buying, reading graphic novels or standalone series based on recommendations. Things like Mouse, The Walking Dead, Watchmen, Arkham Asylum, Why the Last Man, Guardians, but haven't got much into the way of true DC and Marvel comics.
That's an amazing collection of comic books
you
just read off.
You've just read literally the 101 that we were saying. He said, I get my information to make it sound like I know what I'm talking about from listening to you guys. However, I'm at a loss to understand the multiple universes, both Marvel and DC. I was hoping you guys could give a quickish rundown on how many universes there are and how they interact with each other. There's nothing quickish about it.
No. We talked about it a few months ago. We are going to come back to this. We are going to do an Infinite Crisis or a crisis roundup where we talk about this. Maybe what we'll do is we'll do a bit of research and we'll talk about the Marvel multiverse as well.
Yes.
In answer to the...
We're going to have one fewer Marvel verse, I think, by the time Cataclysm's over.
Yeah, well, the Ultimates universe is dying off. The short answer is there's an infinite number of universes because theoretically every choice spawns another universe.
Yes.
There's crossover worlds in every one of these. Put it this way, the easiest way I think of it is whenever the company wants a sandbox to play in and actually do something that's not going to affect their universe, they create another alternate world for it. That's basically the short answer. Marvel needed a place where they could bring new readers in because it was impenetrable coming into Spider-Man 595 or whatever it was when this first Spider-Man movie came out. So Ultimate Spider-Man was born, you know, and it was just a reboot. Into an alternate. So that's basically a short answer, is it's an easy way for them to sandbox stuff off.
Yeah.
Every now and again, these sandboxes collide and we end up with Crisis or we end up with Cataclysm or something like that, where basically they go, whoops, time to,
although, to be
wrap
fair,
something up.
DC's multiverse got very complex.
It did. But the problem is that the more you create more and more of these sandboxes and then you start trying to tie them together, it then becomes...
That's the problem. You can have as many sandboxes as you
want.
Let's
talk about Final Crisis, shall
no.
we?
Not right now. Not right now.
Don't harsh my Christmas mellow. Okay.
Well, yes. It's 5 episodes for that.
So the short answer is there's no easy answer to this, and we will come back.
We'll be dedicating a 4-hour show to this in 2014.
We might do a two-parter.
Actually,
on this one.
There's something we've been kicking about for next year is doing a series of like in between episodes, doing kind of panel by panel what we're sort of workshopping, and we might actually dedicate I know our old pal Nima Afshar, who's been on the show before, wants to do this with Akira, and we're going to do that as a separate show, but rather than trying to cram that in, I think, into the main thing.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
But we might use that series to do things like Crisis Explained and Marvel Explained and things like that. So it's a really good idea. Thanks for the feedback.
Yeah.
Look, while we're wrapping things up, we haven't got much time. I want to just give a quick thank you to everyone who's listened and supported the show over the last year. Honestly, you're the reason we do it. We do it because we love comics, but man, you guys have been amazing this year. There's the feedback you've given us, the support, the numbers have been going up. We love doing this show.
We've seen a consistent progressive rise in the numbers for the last 6 months.
And
it's been amazing.
Also, so. So thank you to all the listeners, everyone who's written in, anyone who's left feedback. Fantastic. I can't mention you all because I'll forget half of you. You know who you are. We've mentioned you on the show throughout the year. Also got to thank people like Laramie Taylor, who was our guest. Laramie Taylor, Nicholas Scott, Chris Claremont, Paul Bedford, the Purcell brothers.
The Purcell brothers, amazing.
Phil Jimenez, we interviewed. Justin Randall. Everybody we met at Supernova.
Grant Morrison.
Grant Morrison.
Christian Reed.
Yeah. Christian Reed, Len Wein. And
artist for
Dave McKean.
Dave McKean.
That we had on here. At the Kelly Sue DeConnick, of course. JP Colongi, Chris Claremont.
Did you mention Nicholas Scott?
Nicholas Scott, I mentioned JP Colongi. Jeff Lemire at the start of the year, which really started all of our interviews, and of course everyone who I've tried to set up interviews with this year who've been really generous with their time and emails, but we just haven't gotten it together. Thank you for even listening to us.
And Tom Taylor. Tom Taylor at Supernova, who was gracious enough to talk to us.
Tristan Jones.
And Tristan Jones as well, absolutely.
That's amazing.
You know, it's been an amazing year. Amazing. It's been an amazing ride
it's
this
year.
It's
been a big year. Next year...
and Kelly Sue DeConnick.
We just mentioned Kelly Sue.
Yeah. Sorry.
Next year's going to be even bigger because, as we've mentioned before, we are looking at opening behind the panels at the shop.
Yes.
So when that happens, we will be the podcast with a store.
And look, I want to put a shout out there right now, and I'm going to say, if you are a CPA, if you are a lawyer, you know, who deal with businesses and blah, 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 you are Sydney-based and you are ready to take on another client, please contact us.
Yeah.
Because we will be looking for a CPA. We will be looking for a lawyer. We will be looking for a real estate agent to find the right premises, et cetera, et cetera.
We are deadly serious about this. Yeah. We love comics so much. We want to get paid for loving comics.
Mm. Yep.
And it might be a fool's errand, but goddamn, but it's our fool's errand. So
we are 100% positive that we can make a success of this.
Yes.
We think we have the right idea for a store that is going to be the store that every geek wants to go to, male or female.
And look, and finally, I got to say on a personal note, David and David, when I finally worked out which one was which, you guys have been not only awesome co-hosts, but awesome friends this year, helped me through some stuff. And also just have been so much fun. This is the part of the week I look forward to most.
Mm. And I think so, I can speak for Dave at this point. I can speak for the Daves when I say we couldn't do the show without you, Richard.
Yeah.
So, and you know, this show it started as our baby, but you have basically become the voice of panels. So it is, I couldn't do the show without you. And I thank you so much for going on this wild ride with me.
And we should both say, while we're mutually, you know,
don't say it. Clean tag.
Congratulating is the word I was looking for.
I already have to go and find one beep to take.
Yeah, I know.
I'll be taking a leave of absence.
You know what? It's our Christmas episode. I'm not going to beep it out.
There you go. And I'm also
beep it out.
We'll just blame the eggnog. But we should say on another. Well, that's why we're here, being semi-serious. David Anthony Longo, we keep talking about firing you, but
even in your Christmas card,
even in my Christmas card, I said that to him. But honestly, you're the best thing that's happened to the show this year. Mm. So we had all those other guests on. You started as a couple of regular guest appearances.
I'd like to share with you a little secret. The little secret is, we said, yeah, come on the show. Come and do the show. You came on the show. We looked at each other afterwards after you left. We went, that was pretty good. That worked pretty well. Then you came on the show a second time. We went, that went pretty well. And we kind of looked at each other after a couple weeks and we went, we should invite him on as a regular.
And he's still here.
And you're still here. So, yeah, you have become an integral part of the panel's family. So don't think you're going anywhere.
Thanks, guys. Yeah.
And from this point on, I'm going to officially say, you're not fired.
Right? Yeah, look, 2000.
I quit.
Well played, sir.
And on that bombshell. Until next week, you're going to have an award ceremony next week, just before Christmas, but we will actually be...
We won't have a normal episode next. Next week will just be an award show.
It'll be episode 84, but it'll be a very different format, a lot of fun. Please tune into it. Until then, you can find me at...
Then we're going on holidays, right?
Then we're going on holidays for...
2 weeks.
2 weeks. 2 weeks.
Now, we were going to go on holiday for 2 weeks. There may be a third in there, so yeah. Just stand by. We have found a new premises.
Yes.
So we are moving. We signed leases today, but we can't move until January 11th. Mm. So there is a very strong possibility that that weekend, which I think was the weekend we were supposed to be back, we may actually not have a studio.
Look, you know what? There'll be content out there. I'm going to be doing interviews on the sly. There will be...
Are you cheating on us?
I am cheating on you, David. You know it's my motif. I go off and do ABC Radio sometimes.
Yeah.
When you're not looking.
Newsarama.
Newsarama. Look, guys, thank you all once again. This has been... And as you pointed out, Dave, when I just listed off that number of people that we've had on here, it's been an amazing year. I can't believe we actually did it.
Yeah, no, it's been fantastic.
I can't wait to see what next year holds.
Here's to 2014.
Which I think is going to be... 13 is always such an unlucky number. Mm. I think 14 is going to be magnificent.
Well, 7 is considered to be a lucky number, and 14 is made of two of them.
Right. It's the year of the horse next year. I was born in the year of the horse.
There you go.
So I'm... stoked. But
now, back to before I interrupt you, where can people find you?
They can find me, well, on a horse.
With no name.
With a horse with no name. Lost in the... you can find me on Twitter at DVDBits, although I'm taking a little bit of a social media hiatus until the new year. You can also find me at TheRealBits.com and, of course, on BehindThePanels.net and you, as you said before, Newsarama. David, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at David McVeigh. You can find me at geekactually.com. Be aware that we also have another podcast that's called The Geek Movie Club. It is currently on holiday, and it will be back in the new year at the same time as when Panel comes back. So
awesome.
Be looking for that. We didn't have a Christmas episode for that because that show just doesn't have a schedule. Mm. You know?
it's when it wants to be.
When it wants to be, when it grows.
When we can find the keys to the clubhouse.
That's correct.
Yeah. Hey, we did 5 of them.
We did, and we did 4 in a row, which is just amazing. Long run.
DamnGoodCup.com. We got some Anchorman stuff coming out. There's going to be some interviews this weekend once everybody's got a chance to see it because they're very spoiler ridden. And you can also find me on Twitter at Dave Longo.
Fantastic.
And can I just say happy holidays? Merry Christmas to everybody.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas to the world.
to the world.
And in that spirit...
May you enjoy the presents.
In that spirit, I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
And I'm David Longo.
And this has been a whole year of Behind the Panels.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Hey!
Jingle bells, Batman smelt, Robin laid an egg. The Batmobile lost the wheel, and the Joker got away.